Welcome back to Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And today we are going to be asking each other the questions that we would love to ask Taylor if we could get her under a truth serum or a lie detector test.
Exactly. And we've been waiting for this.
We've been needing it
because you know we're never going to get her in that chair on the
never.
Vogue interview set. And I want it so bad.
We're almost on the no-fly list.
Oh, we are.
So this might just put us back on there. But you know what? We have to speak our truth for the people. I did a video about this last week. People loved it. So many people were saying, do it as a podcast. And I said, you know what? Your wish is our command. We're going to do it as a podcast. But before we get into it, girls, we haven't said this in a while, but if you're not on the Patreon, you need to be on the Patreon. Weekly bonus episodes is not even enough to describe what you get on there. You get all of our unedited reactions to things, not just Taylor, things all over the place. Our reactions to Lady Gaga Mayhem, those are going to be up there. You get Madeline reviewing Eras Tour books that disappoint her. You get Madeline doing Get Ready With Me for Valentine's Dinner while I listen to Sabrina Carpenter's new deluxe tracks. You get that. You get a backlog of all of my Twitch streams. So like 2-3 hour deep dives into various artists, Demi, Selena, Miley. Girls, it's for $6. Hello.
Oh, you're busting open you're literally robbing the bank. $6 for all that content, please.
And you know
we're giving it away.
If you're on the Patreon and you love us, or you aren't on the Patreon and you love us, you never know what city we might be blowing into near you sometime soon. DC, LA, we love you. We love you so much that you sold us out, and we're ready to be sold out in the other places that we are visiting. To see a full list of the cities, evolutionofsnake.com for tickets. We can't wait to see you there.
It's going to rock.
It's gonna rock harder.
And that's on period.
Alive. Period.
And that's on period.
Cup shaken.
Mm-hmm.
Cup shaken.
You see how that works?
Question one. Madeline, what is the first question you'd ask Taylor?
So the first question that I would like to ask is, it has multiple parts. So let me just walk you through this. So
let's go.
Now I'm talking to Taylor. So I'm using you terminology here. So has the way that you've approached writing about your personal life changed since the debut record? More specifically, has your relationship to your writing changed as people have become more and more obsessed with your personal life and seen it play out in songs? And last but not least, do you regret focusing so much on that in the beginning?
This has shaken me to my core. Let me just read you back the first question that I wrote for Taylor. Do you regret opening your life up in the way you did to your relationships now that you're older and wiser? Or does it feel like a fun game to drive the people crazy?
You see how that works? We did not talk about this at all.
Headed snake.
You see how that works? And that's the geniosity. And that's kind of the scary part about Evolution of a Snake, is that we are in sync in a way that normal people can't comprehend.
You wouldn't understand it. And we don't even live in the same continent.
No. And we're not even in the same time zone. Describe that. Explain that to me. You tell me what it is. I can't. So
it's Swiftian magic.
Obviously, this is something that we are both wondering. And I honestly think, you know, in spite of the two-headed snake of it all, I do think this is something that any, like, longtime OG Swiftie, even, honestly, I'll throw the bone, even Swifties up through, like, 1989, you wonder this all the time. Because it's like, it's so much bigger than I think she ever could have predicted when she was first starting out, that it's like, you just have to wonder, do you regret it? Because now you're locked in. And you could make the argument, like, when she was doing Folklore and Evermore, was that kind of like the little escape room, like the little escape hatch that you can, like, oh, I can do this instead. And I don't always have to be doing it about my personal life. And I mean, it was a massive success, et cetera, et cetera. But with new revelations, was it the escape hatch, or was it just a twist in the narrative?
Well, my question is, can you even help yourself, really? Like, even when you are doing Folklore and Evermore, the tea is that so much of you slipped into that writing. And that's true of, like, novelists and stuff, et cetera. But there's more of a making up element of that. What Taylor does is, like, even when it's completely not about her, it still kind of is. And I wonder if she knows how to write without doing that anymore. Because when we've seen her try to write about things that are completely unrelated to her and have nothing to do with her, looking at Only the Young, for example, we're not exactly getting at, you know, interesting crevices that we haven't been through before. So we've always said Taylor struggles when it is not about me. If it is not about me, what do I do? So we're scared for the movie. That's why we're scared for the movie. Even though I'm sure the movie is probably the Careless Man's Careful Daughter life story in some way, shape, or form. It must be, inshallah. But I also, expanding on your question, wanted to know, like, is it fun to like drive the people crazy? I think she still derives a satisfaction from everybody dunking on someone who wronged her.
I definitely think she does. I mean, I think
that she... saw the smallest man who ever lived live, did we not?
We did. And I also think she
having
has
a ball.
She has like a burner for her to like go and like lurk and like Maddie Healy, just look up the name and see and see the absolute eviscerations that have been rained down upon him by members of her own fan base, just to give herself a little bit of a happy, just to put a smile on her face. I would do
when
the same
not
thing.
2 months before, she was saying, I hate all you bitches. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to ruin my life. I'd rather burn my whole life down.
At the same time, we are the people that provide the most entertainment. At the same time, we are her jesters, and that's all there is to it.
The "are you not entertained" quote really rings in my head when I think about like how what is Taylor's relationship to her writing and people being obsessed with her writing in the public eye. I think obviously it's difficult for her, but I also think she knows that she has no choice. So there's no point fighting something that like is inevitable and not stoppable.
And I think that's a really good point. This is just, I wonder if you come to a certain point where I think everybody eventually comes to this spot, unless you're like going to have a midlife crisis, which I don't think she is for the record, but like you just say, this is my place. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is what my life is going to be. And I'm going to live out the rest of my life doing this. And I mean, everybody gets to that point, I think, or you don't.
Or you don't. It seems like the embrace of Travis, though, was her saying, you know what? Fuck it. I just got to do me. I got to be myself. I got to have the man, and I'm going to be public with him, and I'm going to support him, and he's going to support me, blah, 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 blah. So I think she only really regrets it when a relationship ends, because I can only imagine after the Joe thing ended, she was like, what the hell we gonna do now?
And it's only for certain songs. I mean, you have to admit, Paper Rings. If I was her, and it's like, this is no commentary on what she might be thinking. She definitely repurposes songs and she starts to rethink of them. But immediately in the aftermath, I would think of Paper Rings like my sleep paralysis demon. I'd be like, that, even before they were broken up, the fact that he still wasn't willing to take that extra step, and she's literally begging on Lover.
She wrote all of that in 2018, 2019, and by 2022, they still weren't wedded.
It was so bad that Demois had to start cooking it up. It was so bad that Demois had to
start writing it up.
She had to change the ending, ladies and gentlemen. Peter losing Wendy. Ever heard of it?
And you know what? The reason why Taylor was so pissed about Dumois making up a story about her marrying Joe was because she couldn't get him there. She was like, bitch, I've tried.
I've never thought about that before.
You say I abandoned the ship, but I was going down with it, girl. Like, don't make up my wildest dreams. Trust me, girl, if I had married him, you would know all about it.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
It from the rooftops.
That is a bummer. I never thought about it that way before. That is just like, honestly, it's not funny. Because there's so many rumors that have started about her before. That being the one that she was like, that's enough.
It's like destroying the planet with your private jet. Who cares? Mary Joe, how dare you?
Yeah. I think it was kind of like an ouchie to her. She was like, it's too fresh. Like, this is actually causing me physical, like, I hate it. So can you shut up? And Dumois said, no. She still talks about it to this day.
Another time that I noticed, I felt that Taylor was kind of regretting opening her life up in that way, was with 1989, just because the style of writing changed so much. It was a lot less confessional. It was obviously, we all know, it was her pop memento. That's what she was trying to do. And she really, really, really did not want that album cycle to be about Harry Styles. And it very well could have been. It very well could have been about Harry Styles. And it wasn't. So, you know, even though she wrote a song called Style, it's like, girl, you can't expect people to throw the Harry Styles questions off the table when my next single is called We Never Go Out of Style. It can't.
That's so interesting because I think I don't now history has been rewritten perhaps in my head. But when I think about 1989, I guess I do sometimes think of it as like, oh, it's about Harry Styles. But most of the time, I don't think of it that way. And I don't think most
you
people
see?
Do. Maybe
she did it
maybe
on purpose.
She changed the narrative. She changed the narrative. She was telling us this is about being independent and cutting all your hair off, even though 3 months in, she was already dating Calvin Harris. I bought the narrative.
Never fails to amaze, inspire, and delude me. But it is true. I mean, when you think about it, all the songs on 1989 are kind of about Harry Styles. I mean, the thesis of the album is she lost him, but she found herself, and somehow that was everything, period. But the she lost him part was skipped over real fast. And I think that was because she was under attack. She was besieged by the Directioners. So that was like really not good before. And in Red, she was getting slut shamed to hell and back. So at that point, I think she was kind of like, and she was frustrated. She's like, I didn't date anyone for 2 years and they still slut shamed me. And she wrote Blank Space. So I feel like that was a moment where she kind of publicly was a bit pushing back on people feeling really entitled to her emotions.
And I think that's probably that and Reputation. It's kind of funny that those two albums are such sister records because they really are, not just in terms of like chronologically, but also just like subject matter wise. A lot of people don't see it that way, but I think that they are both two Taylor Swift albums that will never happen again, ever.
And there's a very arm's length feeling about both of those records. Mm-hmm. She's not inviting us in. She's right. Showing. She's not telling. And, you know, I think you could make the same argument for Midnights, but Midnights had some of us casting the sirens as soon as it came out, even when we knew nothing. We heard Question and said, she's not good. She's down.
Well, even like taking it a step further, even a song like Would Have, Could Have, Should Have, that to me was even more revealing than Dear John was. Like, mm-hmm. it was just more everything to me than Dear John was. It expanded upon Dear John in a way that I don't think she was perhaps ready to do on Speak Now. So it's like Midnights is actually, if you think about it, it's pretty revealing in terms of
when you know where to
how
look.
You look at it. When you know where to look, when you have the badge on and you've got your, you know, your nightstick and this, that, and the other thing, you'll find the clues.
And I fear this is what makes it incomprehensible to normal people. And at this point, I'm saying, I don't care.
I'm care.
I'm not
either.
A normal person.
I don't give a rat's ass. I'm having fun. I'm having a ball. When I see normal people engaging with Taylor, I physically recoil.
Mm-hmm. I just
don't like it. I don't think you guys are getting it. I don't think you're getting the 101 because.
No, I don't think you know what you're talking about.
No, absolutely not. So, period.
Well. What a great question that we'll never get the answer to. I love that. My next question was, who is the inner circle? Because I think she knows who they are.
Ooh.
Do you hate them? And how the hell did they know about Folklore? And do you have a restraining order against Steve Hall?
I think we deserve to know the answer.
we need to know all of that.
I want to, that is such a good one because that is real OG juice. So for those of you who don't know, who out there is listening to Evolution of a Snake doesn't know this.
Yeah, you know who they are.
If you don't know, Inner Circle was a quote unquote group of kind of like the Illuminati of the Taylor Swift fandom.
Literally.
They were in an elite quote unquote group of people who had access somehow to old Taylor Swift demos, original recordings, old songs. For example, they had Need for some reason. They had songs like what's the name of that song?
For a while.
They had Better Man. They had We Were Happy.
They had all of the girls.
They had all of these songs that you know on the Vault track. There are some Vault songs that I don't think I ever remember them having.
They didn't have anything from 1989.
They didn't have anything from 1989. They had very, very little from Speak Now. The only one that they had from Speak Now was
Castle's Crumbling. But I think did they have it or did they just know that it existed?
Oh, they just
I don't remember
existed.
The description
That's right,
of that.
Because they never described it because nobody had it. That was why it was such an elite secret song to have. Not a secret song. That's not the word I want to use.
A vault song.
Unreleased. That's the word I want. That was why it was such an elite unreleased song.
But they knew things all the way up until Folklore. And what kills me is that they would deactivate and come back all the time. Like, it was pretty certain that once they deactivated, they would be coming back. After this final deactivation, goodbye, girls. Goodbye. So they posted a couple of days before Folklore something about wearing a scarf And they said, don't worry, Taylor, your secret's safe with us. That is a message from the Zodiac Killer, because folklore was created under lock and key, even from her own label. So how the hell did they know 3 or so weeks before this record came out that it even existed? And that is when they disappeared for good. So I'm like, Taylor, did you finally have enough? At times I've been like, inner circle, are you Taylor?
That's my favorite. That's probably my favorite Tin Hat conspiracy theory. Taylor is the inner circle. Taylor is the inner circle. Well, Taylor, enjoy your reveal from Andrea.
But it's like, but I remember when that message got posted, none of us thought anything about it because like we had no clue that something was coming. It just seemed like.
I thought they were cracked in the head.
Yeah, it just seemed like they were teasing something like, a single release or something. But it wasn't. They knew. How the hell do they know about folklore is my question. Like, it has to be someone that's on her team.
Well, or was. Because there's no more information trickling in.
Maybe they deleted because they had no more access.
And also, I think, you know, because remember Need and all of the girls leaked, when was that? Around Red TV. So after they were banned from the Hallowed Halls, I would assume. There's nobody around to guard the chambers. So
and
Need and all
too.
The girls leaked. And I forgot about Drama Queen.
My favorite song in the world.
Woo! I forgot about that.
You're a heartbreaker. She's a little drama queen.
But she's
best song
still
ever created.
Not me. Some people are saying that. Some people are saying it.
Some people are saying that. Well, they also, they had heard the Reputation tracks, both tracks.
And they should die for that.
Mm-hmm. Family.
I will find them.
And I think they alleged there was a song called Party Like It's 1989. I would like to see it.
And if there was a song called Party Like It's 1989,
we would have it.
You're telling me that she wasn't going to put that on the 1989 vault track when she's putting anything on these vaults. Let's call a spade a spade. There are some songs that are quieting me to this day that are on vaults, but she kept
Party Like
It's 1989 to herself. That sounds like worldwide number one hit in my mind. So where is it?
Well, Madeline, we say that, but we said Castle's Crumbling, worldwide number one hit. And what was it?
Now, let's not start keeping score. Let's not start keeping score. Castle's Crumbling, that was probably one of the darkest moments of my life when I listened to
that
song. That
was one of my top five disappointments as a Swiftie.
Yeah,
it really was.
That, and you know what? It's nobody's fault. It's not Taylor's fault.
No,
it's certainly not Hayley Williams' fault. Certainly not Hayley's fault. She is nothing but an accomplice. But I built it up in my head for so long, and I had a specific idea of it being like a pop punk sort of speak now, story of us kind of a moment. And well, I didn't receive that.
It was not that. I mean, there are so many Taylor moments where, especially with songs, where you just build up a story in your head of what it's going to be, and then it just ends up being something completely different and not even necessarily bad, just different. Mine was Starlight. I had a completely different idea of what a track like Starlight was going to be. And when I heard it, I said, now what? The hell is this?
That's something that I really, really loved about the surprise release of Folklore and Evermore is that we didn't know any preconceived notion. It was just here.
No,
you go.
No time to
I need
make
that
our
again.
Delusions.
This is not the time or the place, but I'm going to say it. I need the Third Sister record and I need it. I need a surprise. I need it dumped into my hands. I need to not have to listen to fan theories for 2 straight months like I had to for Torture Poets. I need to not build anything up in my head. I need to be free. I need to be free, and I want to press play on piano chords, and that's it.
And solve my way through a record.
Mm-hmm.
Is that too much to ask?
I don't think it is.
What's your next question for Taylor?
So my next question for Taylor is, would you change anything about your career choices up to this point? Whose phone calls would you not answer, and who would you not trust?
That is a great, great question. Well, I mean, we have an obvious answer with Scooter Braun.
Now,
someone informed me the other day that he was at her 2015 birthday party. Did you know that?
Was that the one where they were
Beyonce
she's in the white,
was there?
She's in the white. Is that one? Or is it the one where they're wearing all the Christmas stuff?
Oh, it could be that. I'm not
is that
sure,
what I'm thinking
but he
of?
Was at a party with her recently, like when she lived in her New York house, and that threw a big wrench in my estimation of when it all started to go wrong. I feel as though maybe they were like industry frenemies for a while, and Taylor was like keeping up this proxy war. And at first I remember being like, him getting on a FaceTime with Kanye and Justin, like, is that really the reason? You know what? After I've heard Thank You, Amy, after I've heard This Web Can't Have Nice Things, after I've heard Call It What You Want, I'm starting to think that, yes, that might be the damn reason.
That might be the damn reason. Well, all of the thing about Taylor is that I think her sense of loyalty is so strong that, like, you know, when something's important to you, to your values, when somebody who you consider even just like a, you know, secondary friend does something to you that you would never do to them, it's like that, it's like a stab moment.
It's like, on period. That's,
even if it doesn't seem like a big deal to you, it's a big deal to her. So, like, that's it. It's like, oh, so you're going to play like that?
She probably regrets linking up. So was your question about her personal life or her professional life?
Both. The professional life, but both.
I think some advice she probably shouldn't have taken that she would regret taking is waging the war against streaming services. That was some really bad advice that Scott Borchetta gave her. Because if we remember, that was all Scott. Like, that was completely driven by value. Scott. Music has value. Really? Yeah, it's value $250 million in your pocket, bitch. That's what value it is. But he was really gung-ho, and he was a small label head at this point. Like, even though Big Machine had Taylor, they only had Taylor. Like, they weren't really in the space of competing with a Sony, competing with a Universal, which is why all of those labels declined to buy the label when he had it up for sale. So I think he really was thinking that he was ahead of the curve and some sort of, like, smart businessman by being like, Taylor, take a big stance against this. He used her as the proxy to do this stupid war, that if you knew anything about technology and like how the music industry was progressing, like that was inevitable. That was never going to be stopped. And I mean, it's better than piracy too, which was the other big issue that was going on. So having Taylor be the spokesperson for that made her look really stupid in the end. And it also made her, I think, albums suffer on streaming, especially. Like Spotify straight up said when Reputation came out, she's being punished. Because she slandered us and she kept us off for so long, and then kept a 3-week exclusivity window of not being available on streaming for Reputation. When now that we've realized you don't need to do that to sell records, I think she thought I won't sell as many albums if I have it on streaming, but we all know that that's not true.
Yeah, we all know that that's not true now. And you can actually see like the effect that not having her albums on streaming for how many years was it? 3 years? 4 years?
Yeah, from 2014 to 2017.
That's a long time. 3 years. And like the hit that her streaming numbers have taken, you might think it doesn't matter, but it's like, I just saw an infographic just today about like the biggest women in streaming all time. And Taylor wasn't number one. She wasn't number two, number three, number four, number five, number six. She might have been seven or eight. And I was like, Rose.
Well, if you think about it, 1989 didn't clock up as many streams as it should have. And that was her career peak, I'd say, musically at the time. Like that was, if that was available on streaming services when it should have been, like that would have popped the hell off.
Right.
So its streaming numbers to me aren't even accurate now because it only started getting tracked in 2017, 3 years after the fact.
And you know, the other thing is that now I can't even imagine. I literally can't imagine an album not going up on streaming. I can't fathom it.
Who would do that to themselves? It's counterproductive.
It's completely counterproductive. And at the time, I remember being very resentful of the fact that I had to ride for it. I was really mad.
Yeah.
I was like, well, don't put me in this position.
I had to pretend to care about it. Open letter to Apple Music. I mean, all of this stuff. I had to be like, yes, girl boss, slay, really, while downloading Spotify. And when you're thinking about as a consumer, and you know, Taylor's all about the fans, streaming is the best thing that's ever happened to a music lover. Well, right. In some ways and in other ways not, but mostly it's a great tool that has made music really accessible for people. So to be against it at that level, like I understand doing the Apple Music thing and being like, I want you to compensate artists fairly, but the whole I'm withholding all of my stuff because I'm so important that you're going to change it for me, it ended up making her look a bit arrogant.
And it didn't work. Although I feel like some people...
It didn't work.
The only time it worked was with that thing with Apple Music, and that's a whole different kit and caboodle. That's the truth.
A lot of people think that was a coordinated stunt. And
a lot of people named Swiftologist, a lot of people named Zachary. this is a conversation
many,
that we've had before.
Many people are saying this.
Exactly.
Many.
And I think we should open the case.
I'm saying it.
And I'm saying it.
I think also There are so many conversations that I wonder if she like regrets with Scott, because she has alluded to several times how difficult it was to be creative and to do eras and to like evolve as an artist under Big Machine. And I'm like chomping at the bit to have more information about that, what that was like for her.
Yeah, me too. That's definitely a big, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for the conversations about Red, some of the quote unquote riskier songs on Red, a fly on the wall for the conversation about 1989. I would think that Reputation was an even crazier conversation than even 1989 was, because Reputation, I mean, that was really out of the woodwork if you think about it compared to all the other albums, even just up to that point. Like, she's something else, and she was something else back then.
Under normal circumstances where your biggest artist hasn't been canceled, that's a risky album to put out. Right. So I imagine that Scott, idiot Borchetta, was like, having a mental breakdown about that. But at a certain point, Taylor also said that she funded most of her activities by herself. Like, she funded her music videos. She was never relying on the label for a budget, which explains a lot about how her career has able to have been so detailed and detail oriented and world building. But also it makes me think that the relationship between her and Scott and the support of the label behind her was never that strong. It was really more of a like kind of fatherly figure, I'm going to oversee and advise you as a mentor type of thing, rather than like, you are my boss as my label head. But I think he probably pulled that card a few times in situations where she was like, I really do not want to be having this conversation with you. Old man.
Old man. And he said,
he was
well,
like, I don't
what?
Like Shake It Off. And Taylor was like, I don't give shit.
You
the people
got
need
to shake
the people
it
need
off.
To shake.
Yeah. Then you shake it off. That's a really big one. Then I'm sure he was like, you gotta be out of your freaking
You're out of your
mind.
You're
and then
out
guess
of
what?
Your mind.
It became weddings. It became graduations. It became funerals.
Well, it's crazy to me that when she turned in 1989, he said, that's great. Can I have three country songs? Are you cooked? That wouldn't have made it a country album. That would have made it the worst album ever created. Imagine that. 1989 with three country songs tapped onto it.
I don't want to imagine that.
I'm surprised he didn't make her do Shake It Off country version. He made her do
now,
We Are Never country version.
Now that is one of the travesties, the weird versions. And then like on the inverse side, the mine pop version. It's like those were really, really annoying things
that
I feel like
is
newer
that?
Fans
Teardrops on my
don't
guitar,
even
radio remix?
Know about. The
Get
weird
that
remixes
me.
That they would make of either this is a pop version of this country song or this is a country version of this pop song. Weird.
The pop
and
version
just
of
like
mine
never
sucked, by
good.
The way.
Oh, it was so bad. Like, it's already a pop song. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, he doesn't because he doesn't know anything. This is what I've learned about Scott Borchetta. I just came up with
Nothing
this just
knower.
Now. He doesn't know anything about music, and that's on that. Does music have value? I don't know about that.
It does. No, to him. It has a $250 million price tag. That's what music
yes.
has value for.
Yep.
$250 million in my pocket expeditiously with your stolen lullabies. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Oh, it's
I
so ironic.
I get the sense that he was pretty maddeningly unemotional about the entire sale of her master recordings because he was at turns horribly rude about it, dismissive in public, like things that he said about it, very diminishing of her and her feelings, and then turning around and acting like it never happened. So I'm kind of like, you deserve prison. You actually need to go to jail. Meanwhile, Taylor's like, I can go anywhere I want, just not home. Like, you are an evil man. Was any of it true? Did you have it planned like this the whole time? Were you just biding
Seriously.
Your time? Like, you knew once the sixth, did he know by Speak Now that come that sixth album, he was going to be like, I'm getting the hell out of here. Let's just sell it up.
That's absolutely crazy. I don't like to linger on it too much. It's like sometimes I think it's easier in my brain if I think of it like there was a big almighty row. Like they had some massive fight and like it was just a big deal. But I think it's probably more likely that he just was like, so this is how it's going to go. And I still want the masters. And she was like, no. And he
my
said,
theory
well.
Was they had a dust up over 1989. There was like a big issue because I remember she said specifically a lot of resistance for that. There was a big issue with that. And she made him look really stupid in front of his own employees by having it be a huge success because he was saying, you're going to be over. You'll be over if you go pop and you don't have any country. Like, we're done. And that album ended up being more successful than anything she'd ever done. So when it came to Reputation, I think he, because he had been so humbled by her direction from the last time, he was like, okay, do whatever you want, and really was so hands-off with it. Like, do you remember there was no – Scott was not giving interviews. There was no sort of, like, mention of him at all. Like, it really went radio silent, whereas before – he was such a like constant figure in the TSCU. So I think after Reputation, he was like, I'll just let her do whatever because we just have one more record and then I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah, that sounds just about right because there's no way. And Taylor has even alluded to it before too. You know, she said in sort of a coy way, but if you want to think about it as passive aggressive, you could too, being like, the label didn't really think that this was a good idea. They thought that it was a bad idea to do a pop record. She said it in so many words, in a nicer way, but a way that we could perhaps reflect on in today and say perhaps there was something underneath that Scott Borchetta didn't like having said in public. But, you know, she's a girly and she'll write your name. She will write your name, ladies and gentlemen. And she did. So I think 1989 is, I think you're probably right. It's the source of all turmoil. If not,
there's
red.
One thing you should know about me before we begin. He's got my pass frozen behind glass, but I've got me.
And that's all there is to it. But I've got me.
What's your next question, Diva?
Okay, so what impact did the downfall of the Girl Squad and all of your fair weather friends have on your ability to trust friends going forward? When you make a new friend, are you suspicious of them?
Ooh, that is such a good question. And that gets at a lot of what we talk about, which is like, okay, Camila Cabello, bestie for years, allegedly, according to you, dropped like it was nothing. Dropped like nobody cared. Dropped like you never told her your middle name.
Yep. She doesn't know it to this day. She doesn't know it.
I feel like she's really good at keeping it surface. She has to be. She's like, she can't be walking around confessing her secrets to people.
I think she's very much like an arm's length person, but I think she's also the kind of person where like people will walk away from a conversation with her, like just having met her 2 or 3 times, and be like, oh my God, like
she's
wow,
the nicest person ever.
She's so nice. You know, she's so open. I feel like we really connected. And meanwhile, Taylor's like, I forgot that even happened.
Well, I saw this happening at the secret session. Everybody in the room felt like she was only there to talk to them and then she would turn it on for the next person. Like it really was amazing to watch her do it in person. I have a specific memory of like watching her like go through each person, like take a little break, take a sip of water, put the face back on, open her arms, do the hug. Like it was crazy to me how she, the stamina that she has to like go through those interactions with people. And when you see her at award show too, she always has like something specific to say to people and she's always like got in her mind who she wants to talk to. So I can't imagine that she's like dumb enough to be telling people things she shouldn't be telling them. Right. And to me, it really seems like Karlie Kloss was where she learned that lesson.
And it really, really sucks because you know what? She was not the twin from her dreams, even though she really seemed like she was. I reflect on the Karlie Kloss Taylor Swift friendship from time to time because like they really were like little twinsies. And I feel like if I met a girl who looked just like me, who everybody said like, oh my God, you guys look so much alike. And we had so much in common. And we were both just like the pretty supermodel girls. And we were both the it girls. And then it turned out that she was El Diablo in disguise. That would turn me into the Joker. So
I mean, if you think about it, before 1989, her circle of friends was like fairly low key. It wasn't a bunch of other huge celebrities. It was like a celebrity here and there. Selena Gomez, Diana Agron. But like her real friends, Ashley, Claire, Abigail, the people she was really probably like spending her time with and telling her secrets to were not big celebrities in the same arena as her. With 1989, she just gathered so many more friends in such high places. And I think she was so like glad to be the cool girl sitting at the cool table that she was just saying anything.
Oh, she was saying anything. She would say anything to get people to like her at the table. There was no gosh darn reason to continue to pursue a friendship with Kanye West and Kim Kardashian beyond just like, everything's good now and I forgive you. You know what I mean? Like there was no reason to keep doing it other than they're the cool people in the room and I want them to like me.
I need their stamp of approval. Yeah, that. And also, I don't know. I think that she was on a bit of a power trip too. We know this. She was like really in her maximum, I am the diva, hear me roar, trying to control the media, trying to control the narratives around her. So I think she thought that she could talk people into doing what she wanted them to do. And I think with Karlie Kloss to me, now this is just my like imagination of what happened between them. There's that picture of Karlie and Scooter on a yacht. I have a feeling that Taylor had been confiding in Carly about some of the issues she was having with Big Machine and with Scott Borchetta. And she, Carly, relayed that to Scooter Braun casually in a conversation, like a cocktail conversation. Probably didn't think it was a big deal what she was telling her, but didn't realize that that gave him the information that he needed to approach Scott and back end this deal, basically. That's kind of my, like, my harebrained idea of what happened. I don't know necessarily that Carly Kloss, like, intentionally, like, stabbed her in the back, but I do think loose lips sink ship. I think she just was just yapping, didn't realize what she was saying, and did something really consequential to Taylor, and that taught her a very important lesson.
Which is, we don't tell Carly Kloss or Carly Kloss types what's going on at the label or anything of that ilk from here on out.
We go to the vault box, Gigi Hadid, and we tell her.
I'll tell you one thing. Brittany Mahomes doesn't know nothing.
Oh, she didn't even know Torture Poets was coming out.
No, she had no clue about that. You know, and it's not to just like, oh, Taylor and Brittany aren't really friends. I'm sure that they are friends, but I don't think that Taylor is sharing her deepest, darkest secrets with Brittany Mahomes, because she's kind of a loose cannon. Among everything else that she is, she does a lot of this. She really does. And that's not the vibe.
It does continually amaze me how many people Taylor has interacted with that are doing a lot of this that say nothing. Because I do think that now, post the Carly thing, she has learned a thing or two about an NDA and an enforceable NDA. Because you're telling me that Maddie Healy hasn't spilled yet? Why?
Yeah, that's really starting to not make sense. But as he should be.
But he embarrasses himself all the time. He can't resist spilling. So it's kind of like Joe hasn't spilled. None of the exes has spilled. Bar Calvin, who spilled for like a minute. Nobody's talking. The scorned people aren't speaking. And that is an interesting nugget.
I always think about that as well. And when I think about, there's some men that it really makes sense. Jake Gyllenhaal makes sense.
Yeah.
John Mayer,
oh, we get it.
Makes sense. Joe Jonas, spoken. To a point. Spoken. Joe Jonas makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, what do you have to say? You already said all the tears on her guitar and that horrible,
you got
much better
to
song.
To
you got nothing else
we
to add to the conversation. Joe Alwyn makes sense. Maddie Healy, Calvin Harris, those are the two that I really see.
I'm saying
and incidentally, those are the ones that I want to know the most about. Incidentally, and they're saying nothing.
You see how that works.
You see how that works.
Maddie is time will tell. But
yeah, because he's got his album coming out. And I'll be seated. I like to stream.
Oh, I'm ready. And also, you know what? The 1975, they're good. Sadly. I wish I didn't have to say that.
Well,
but
this has
good.
Always been the case. This is like, people were there in 2014. I was on Tumblr. I was there.
I was listening to Girls. I was listening to Sex. I was listening to Chocolate. The City.
These are the tunes.
But when I listen to The City, that's a Taylor Swift song to me.
Oh, now
I literally,
it's a 1989 song to
song.
Me. It is a 1989 song to me. It's crazy. It's coded.
She's
it's coded.
It better.
She sounds better. We need a cover. We need a recorded cover. I know I that's mean, out, we, off the table now, but I need it.
That really
sorry.
Is forever
you have to make
off
it happen.
The table.
Yeah.
Damn.
And I want it so
Come
bad.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Collaborative
so
album. We were robbed.
Yeah.
We really
were
robbed of that, actually. That's what we wanted. Benny Blanco and Selena, keep it.
Keep it. Taylor and Maddie, oh, I'm seated. I've been in the chair this whole time waiting.
Oh, I've spent my whole life waiting. Well,
waiting.
Is it my turn to do a question?
Was that my
it
question
is.
Or your question?
Your question.
That was my question. Okay, you go.
Okay, this one is kind of rogue. I don't think I'm going to know how to answer it even. Taylor Swift, who is your Taylor Swift? Who is your all-time favorite artist? Who really? And you can only pick one, because if you listen to her, everyone's her favorite artist.
Right.
Everyone in the world is her favorite goddamn artist. She heard two songs of yours that she liked. You're the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I'm like, who are the people that you freak out about when you see them? You play their music and it you're connected to it in a way that nobody else is. I have a couple of guesses. I mean, I think for sentimentality, NSYNC and Justin Timberlake. She was obsessed. Like, she just was.
Right. She was.
So that, but that to me doesn't give her favorite artist. That's just like, for me, Hilary Duff was my favorite when I was a kid. It's like that. It's not serious.
Right.
I also don't get Shania Twain being her favorite artist, serious vibes. I get that as like love you, queen, but I don't think that she's like imprinted on her right. in that way. For some reason, I'm stuck to her Speak Now artist inspirations. That kind of seems to me where she really solidified a certain part of her artistry. And I wonder, like, who was it then? I think it very much is Joni Mitchell. And that would have been a continued reference had Joni Mitchell not gathered her.
If she's going to sing, good luck. Oh, it's my favorite quote in the whole world.
You can't come back from
that. We have to say it.
You can't come back from
that. Another potential to Leanne Rimes and the Chicks. But those are kind of like Shania to me. Younger, not quite the same. If I had to pick one from today, and I know this is going to sound crazy, and maybe not a lot of people will agree with me, but I have seen evidence in the past, even before certain events have come to pass, Lana Del Rey.
Actually,
let me speak.
Easy. Lana Del Rey.
And I think that if it's not like she's my Taylor Swift, I do imagine Taylor in times of trouble might say, I need my Lana Del Rey on now. I need Lana on now.
That is
That's
so
kind of how
interesting.
I think about it. Yeah.
I think Taylor could write Sympathy is a Knife about Lana. Couldn't even be her if I tried. Like, there's something about Lana's artistry, specifically as a writer. Like, because don't get it twisted, girls. Taylor Swift is a writer first and foremost. I think Taylor is envious of Lana's ability to write. Because for me, in pop, there's two huge lyricists, and it's Lana and Taylor. And they do very, very different things. But Lana can do Taylor. Let's not get it twisted. Lana can do Taylor if she wants to do Taylor. Can Taylor do Lana? She's tried.
Now, I'm interested. I'm interested in this Lana can do Taylor. Where's Lana's blank space?
Well,
where's Lana's Bejeweled?
Born to Die.
That's no blank space.
Okay. Let's take pop out of it. We'll take the pop out of it, and we'll just do
like
the confessional diaristic songwriting.
No, see, this is why I think these conversations are dumb, because it's like they do two completely different things.
So I'm dumb. Okay, I'll just kill myself.
I don't think Lana can do Taylor, and I don't think Taylor can do Lana. That's my tea. That's
okay,
my tea.
That's your tea. But I think Taylor yearns for something Lana can do as a writer that Lana doesn't yearn for from Taylor. Do you see what I mean? Like, I don't think Lana wants to be the pop girly that's not really at the top of her mind, whereas I do think that Taylor wants to be considered to be an incredible, prolific lyricist that, like, is kind of an iconoclast, eclectic person. I think she's – Torture Poets to me was definitely like, I'm a writer and I want everyone to know that. And I feel like every Lana album, we get that impression, whether or not it's like a slow, moody album or whatever. She just kind of gets afforded that credibility. And I think Taylor wants that credibility too.
Well, T, I could see that. I could definitely see Taylor wanting to be seen as more of like an indie alternative kind of a girly. But
never going to happen.
Here's the thing is when you make Shake It Off, you can't undo –
Nor should you.
You can't undo it.
When you make Cruel Summer, you have to keep trying to make Cruel Summer. Again, we need multiple Cruel Summers. I'm sorry.
I want to see Lana do Cruel Summer.
Lana can't even do I Love It by Camila Cabello. She can't. She literally can't. That just popped into my mind. I was like, oh, you're right. She really can't do Taylor.
And we did see some of it.
She can't even
do Camila
Cabello.
We did see some of it. That's crazy. Camila Cabello. I will never forget that as long as I live. That was incredible. Wow.
And for the people who say that Taylor is a bad dancer, I need you to watch Lana trying to do simple choreography on stage. She, even to her own songs, when she has a simple choreography and it's just like lift your right hand, she's like jerking it up and it's like 10 seconds behind her dancer is like, that is a challenge dancer.
And it kills me. And that's why she just stands there and does her thing. Oh, yeah. Take it away.
Let's just stick to what we're good at.
Take it away. Diva.
So, yeah, I think that's it. We've settled on an answer. Oh, but you know what? Is James Taylor in there? Probably.
Oh, he could be. James Taylor.
Stevie
Nicks? He's the OG.
Stevie Nicks.
How could we forget? I'm sure if we didn't say that, there'd be people in the comments. Because
they're still going to say that.
We spent too much time talking about could Lana do Taylor, can Taylor do Lana? You see how that works?
Well, sometimes we have to have a little detour as a treat.
Well, sometimes we do. And you know, something that I forget about all the time and I remember it is that Taylor used to cite Britney as a pretty big influence.
I was about to say, we haven't had her really expound on that in a meaningful way, and that's upsetting to me because I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, especially like considering, I was thinking, and I always think this when Taylor, her songs about like how the sale of her masters felt and how that particular acute feeling of like being like owned and having your own work sold away. If Britney would ever get any kind of like relatability out of songs like that, and if she listens to Taylor, if she feels connected to those songs. But that's an answer we're never going to get. I don't know what Britney's listening to. She doesn't tell us those things. She tells us everything but...
I don't know that Britney's listening to anything these days.
No, I don't.
She's Maria River Red at the moment, so...
No, she's on her own. She's on Emoji Land.
We love you so much, Britney, forever. You are everything to me, but she's spinning. On our highest tiptoes. That's what she's doing.
She's spinning. And that's exactly what she's supposed to be doing. And that's exactly what she's supposed to be doing.
I'd love to hear more about Taylor's pop influences because I feel like we hear a lot of who inspired her to be a writer, but I'm like, who inspired you as a performer? Like when you're putting your sets and your stage together, like surely Britney was a massive influence there. Like what tours did you like? What concerts did you see or attend that really were like formative to how you were going to do your pop shows?
Mm. Exactly. I want to know that too. Did you ever see Spice World? I'm asking. We don't have that
the
information.
The people want to know. Did you go and see the best damn tour?
Well...
I did. I was there.
Well, we know. We know that. Trust me, we know it. We know
stabbed
somebody
my way
was
to
there.
The top.
Yep. I stabbed my way up to the top.
clearly. All right, Madeline, what is your
next
question?
Okay, so this is a good one. If you could go back in time and undo any relationship, would you? Now, here's the tea, is I have an answer to this question. And I think I wrote this question and I immediately knew what her answer would be. And I think that this is the truth. The answer is dead ass no. Because guess what?
Every relationship is a step you take.
Everything you lose is a step you take. Every single relationship has been a song. If nothing else... And every single relationship, you can't deny this, has produced one unbeatable, unerasable song. Even Tom Hiddleston has Getaway Car.
Mm-hmm. You see how that works? Well, Calvin Harris.
Now, Calvin, he's an interesting, sort.
Give me the song.
Infidelity, put on your records and regret meeting me. Some of us were there.
I think... You know what? In a way, she has like an insurance against ever feeling bad about your breakups because who amongst us is able to walk away from a breakup being like, yeah, that was really productive. Like actually, even though I had a mental breakdown, like that was actually like, oh, that elevated my career into a new stratosphere. It's like, how could you not look back on the Jake Gyllenhaal thing after healing from it? You know, because I think with the manuscript, she really has healed from it. How can you not look back on that and think, damn, thank you so much, King. Thank you so much because I got All Too Well and that is more rewarding than any validation from you ever could have been, rat.
Exactly. You see how that works? You see
Dear
how
John,
I pummeled
you? I had the opportunity to end John Mayer with one song with ease and I didn't.
And the other girls.
And he had a mental breakdown after that happened. Her power.
Yeah. To this day, some of us still remember, and he should remember that in his little rat brain. Some of us were there.
I think she might regret Maddie. I think she might actually regret that one. That one, like the writing on the album was really giving, I want to set fire to my house and burn all my clothes.
What was I thinking?
Yeah, what the hell did I do all of that for? And then also like Torture Poets Department is an artistic feat, but I don't think the public... There's been so much Torture Poets negativity. It's unreal. That album really is going to be reappraised in 2 or 3 years. But for now, I wonder if she's like, was it worth it?
Did you get the girl? Did you get the guy? Did you
she
get
did,
the job?
Actually. She did, actually.
And that's
in the, end,
the thing.
She got
she
the job.
Won.
She got
think
the guy.
Think about all the ways that she won. You mm-hmm. can't deny it. This is what I'm saying.
You can't
like,
deny it. But do I think she's embarrassed by that? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely think she was for a time. And still she rose. Do you see how that works?
Still she
and
rose.
And still she put out the album. That's crazy.
But she also, I think, rid herself of that shame by writing about it. She was like, you know what?
Yes, it's the cure.
I know. She's like, I know it was dumb, okay? And here you get to hear about it. And I'm being humble. And in a way, she's taking it back. She's taking the embarrassment back.
Oh, yeah,
back.
She
it's
owns
hers.
The narrative.
You can't make her feel embarrassed about it anymore because she said, listen, was any of it true? No.
I get to be the fool. I get to be Boo Boo the Fool. And you know what's funny is nobody ever mentions how Boo Boo the Fool makes millions.
That's my foolish one.
That's my
foolish one. She's still checking her mailbox.
Every day she's out there at the mailbox. I can't stop her. I've tried a million times.
And that's the overarching thesis of her career.
Life.
Foolish one.
Life. Foolish one. And
long may it last.
To this day, how could it be?
May you
can we just start saying random stuff from songs? Like, no way did you just reference Robin.
This is getting out of hand.
They can't say, listen, we know the
evolution
songs.
Of a snake knees.
Evolution of an encyclopedia. Not just anybody can listen to this, okay?
No.
Only
no,
the scholars.
This isn't for everybody.
No.
Okay. All right. My next question is, how do you feel about the incessant trend of short songs and algorithm playlisting taking over the music industry? What kind of impact has that had on your writing? And, you know, when it comes to Lover, we see one version of that. And when it comes to Torture Poets, we see another version of that. She said, I'm not doing sub 3-minute song.
Right.
Thank you, Billie Eilish. You're welcome to it. Not me.
And I think we should open this case up because I think a lot of artists are being pressured to do it. Even artists that you wouldn't think could befall such a fate. Not naming any names, but I think everybody knows. I think everybody knows that there's a lot of people out there who've been cutting. And you ever hear a song and you're just like, this was engineered to be put into a TikTok. And to a point, it's like you can't even blame the artist because you know they're having a lot of pressure from their label. Luckily, Taylor's in a situation.
That's how I feel about them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Taylor's in a situation where she literally doesn't have to do that because her label knows that these evil little gremlins out there in the world are going to buy her music no matter what she does. So she's free to do 5-minute songs all she wants because we're saying she's the genius. But not everybody has that right. And I'm not defending anybody doing this because I think it is a travesty upon travesty. I think everybody needs to get their like minds checked. Do you guys need help paying attention for longer than 2 minutes and 30 seconds? Like, let me know.
I'm saying three minutes is the bare minimum song time at this point.
Yes, I'm saying
underneath
it.
Is too goddamn short. Selena Gomez coming out with a 2-minute song, that's not a song. It's a ringtone.
Call me when you break up. Especially because there's nothing to it.
What did we learn? Did you get the man? Did you get the job? Did you get the house? You didn't.
Right. And you know,
you got your man. You can have him in your bathtub.
You know, when Taylor, think about it in terms of now that we don't talk, when Taylor writes a 2-minute song, she says, it's not done and I'm not going to put it out.
Well, that was the thing. That's what she said about now that we don't talk. She was like, it didn't feel finished, so I didn't put it out. And you know what? That's the only time when I will take a sub 3-minute song because that song goes all the way off, but it leaves you being like, I need a bridge. Where's the bridge?
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with Midnight Rain. Midnight Rain is begging.
Oh, yeah.
It's begging. It needs a third verse. It needs one more chorus. It needs a little something. Imagine a third chorus that we get a more of a beat and it goes up.
There's no robot.
We go all the hell off and it goes crazy. Now, that would take it to the next level.
I can definitely imagine it.
But there was almost like a – here's the thing. And now I'm going to go hand heart and I'm going to go full Swiftie. Midnight Rain shortness to me is intentional.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's like – that to me, again, it's one of those 3 a.m. songs where you wake up and you're pacing around and you just have a thought. And it's so simple and it's so elegantly executed lyrically that I'm like, well, it didn't really need to go anywhere else.
Right. Exactly. That's the thing. And again, we're
– I'm just being greedy.
I will never accept less than 3 minutes per song. And then it's like, but when Taylor does it, there's a reason.
But there's a difference between an intentionally short song and a song that you can tell was deliberately constructed just to be short so that it gets more replays. If Midnight Rain was the lead single, maybe I'd be like, okay, this is dumb. Also, Midnight Rain is 2 minutes and 54 seconds. It's pretty much a 3-minute song.
Jot that down.
And time that Taylor, to me, has done something that even appears to be like a TikTok song was Antihero, and it slaps.
And it
so
and
I'm
it
not
wins.
Mad about that.
Well, to me, there's like a difference between a song that was engineered to be on TikTok and a song that just so happens to take off on TikTok. Like, I don't think Espresso by Sabrina Carpenter was engineered to be like, oh, we're going to turn this into – but then I knew
because the
when
whole
I first
song
heard
carries.
It.
A TikTok right. song has a good chorus and everything else is completely forgettable and you can live your entire life without knowing it. Messy by yeah. Lola Young. There you go.
Yeah. I the first time I watched the Brits performance of it, and it was the first time I ever heard the verses. Because I've only ever heard, to be fair, I shut it off every time I hear it because it really drives me nuts. So but like I'd never heard the verses before and I was like, what the hell? I didn't know there was more to the song.
As a songwriter, I feel like Taylor would probably be a little bit frustrated by this trend, capitulating to the stream. But you know what, Taylor? Those are streaming demands, right? Like that's a demand right. from the label to make short songs that are replayable. Taylor is capitulating to the streaming demands in a different way by making so many songs. By having 26 songs on the album, she's doing that instead of 10 2.5-minute songs.
Not everybody can do that.
And you know what? I'll take the 26 songs.
Oh, any day. Any day.
Thanks.
I'll take that any day. I don't want
10 no. 2-minute songs. No.
It's like a nightmare to me. A Taylor Swift album coming out and the songs are all 2 minutes, I'd be like, it's over. Pack it up. We lost her, boys. We lost her.
We're done. Well, that's all my questions. Madeline, do you have one you want to conclude
I'll
with?
I'll give one more. I think I have a couple down at the end that are kind of fun. Oh, so I do have a really fun one. Okay, this one's just a little bit of a kiki, a little bit juicy.
A little silly moment.
So what do you really think? And this is to Taylor, remember. What do you really think about the football culture and your new football friends? We're just asking.
I knew you were what do you really think about Brittany?
What do you really think? What do you really think about that? What do you really think about the Wags? What do you really think about it?
And how do you feel about being grouped in with them?
Let's open this case up because I want to know. Do you think Brittany Mahomes is your friend on the same level as, you know, like creative, artistic? I'll say it. Interesting people that you know, like Gigi Hadid and Blake Lively. I mean, I'm asking. And Zoe Kravitz.
Well, she's just about to sell Blake Lively down the river, so I don't think that's a good comparison.
Well, let's take her out. Zoe Kravitz, Gigi Hadid. These kinds of girls. These girls, you know.
Well, she's forcing them to hang out with Brittany Mahomes sometimes. Actually, is she? How often are they overlapping with Brittany? She kind of stopped bringing her little friends to the football games other than Ice Spice, which continues to confound me.
Yeah, Blake hasn't come. When did Gigi Hadid go? Lana went a time or two. Lana was at the Super Bowl last night.
That was hilarious.
Lana, you want to come to the Super Bowl? But that is so, yeah. The thing about Lana, she's so like Americana coded that it's just like, yeah, of course you went. She was like,
I'm going to put on my jorts. I'm going to put on my jorts and I'm going to have a Pepsi. All right. And
that sounds like a fun time. Can I bring my boyfriend? Taylor said,
maybe I can meet a janitor in the bathroom. No. We can hook up. And then he can propose to me and we can get married.
But yeah, I want to know. Tell me what you really think. Inquiring minds want to know because I've got people all up and down the coast who are thinking that you are BFF. You love this. This is your whole life now. Mm-hmm. You're having the time of your life every time you go to a game.
And it's I'm not saying she doesn't love going to a game. That's my whole world.
I'm not saying she doesn't love going to the games. I'm sure she loves going to the games. Uh-huh. She likes to support Travi at the big game, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm asking, does it ever bother you? The whole thing, when you got booed at the Eagles game at the Super Bowl, were you like, this is so funny? Or were you like,
I would have been like, I don't even need to be here, you ungrateful little rat people. I have four albums of the year. What are you talking about?
Who's got the microphone?
Boo.
Can I have the mic? So
yeah,
here's the
thing. Stop the game. I don't have to be here.
Millions of dollars.
I am putting you on the mat with women, you know, a demographic that many of you struggle to reach. I am making American football cool again.
Yeah. And you needed it desperately.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you needed it.
And yeah. So that's all there is to it.
I think also when Travis starts. When he says something stupid at a press conference, at this point now, whatever either of them says reflects on each other in a way that I think we haven't seen before. Like, it's more serious now because they've been so public and so, like, in each other's corner.
Right.
So, like, Travis, again, can be a little bit of a loose cannon sometimes. He's gotten better, that's for sure. I think she has him well-trained, but, like, I'm not sure. And also, I mean, we've said it before and we'll say it again. The Brittany Mahomes friendship – she has no choice. That's the thing. It's like his best friend's wife is not going anywhere. Like if Taylor's going to marry this man, she's going to have to do Thanksgiving maybe with them. She's going to have to go on vacations with them. Like it is the path of least resistance for Taylor to be really girly pop with Brittany Mahomes. Do I think that means that she's telling her all about her secret dark fears? No.
No.
Do I think that they're even sitting there and discussing politics at all? I think it's a completely no-go conversation. And everybody understands that if that conversation comes up, Taylor Swift is not going to be interested in it. And she's the monster on the hill. So what Taylor wants, Taylor gets.
And that's all there is to it.
And Brittany Mahomes is counting her goddamn lucky stars and telling all her flop friends from wherever the hell she's from that she's best friends with Taylor Swift. Little does she know that if they ever broke up, goodbye, Brittany Mahomes, forever.
Oh, we would never hear about that friendship again. We would never hear that name again. And she has to know that intrinsically. And that's why she clings so hard. Mm-hmm. That's why she clings so hard. And
I saw a picture of Brittany Mahomes' wedding dress the other day, and it silenced me.
I need to see this.
You need to look it up.
Because, you know, I have a particular thing.
So her
wedding dresses. Brittany Mahomes' wedding dress.
And I know that Taylor would gasp. Taylor would say,
oh my God. Oh no.
Tyler, put a picture of it up, please.
That is the most.
It's horrid. It's the most 2013 triangle bikini. It is.
Oh my God, Brittany. Oh.
These are the people you're associating with Taylor Swift. I just like to remind you of that.
Oh my God. It's bad from
every
angle.
These are your nearest and dearest. Oh, it gets worse and worse and worse the more you see it.
I'll say one nice thing. I love an extremely long veil. So she cooked on that front, but everything else is a disaster.
I think Brittany should always wear an extremely long veil. Just hide.
Just cover yourself up. Just cover yourself up. We don't want to see it. We don't want to see
Taylor
you.
Taylor can lift the bottom and give you a little popcorn at the game. Then you're done.
Exactly. And you know what? That's a beautiful place to end. Brittany Mahomes being fed popcorn underneath the only good part of her outfit, her veil.
As it should be.
As it should be.
Well, there you go. That is our questions we would ask Taylor. We could definitely do another part of this.
We got some.
There's
more
to come.
Oh,
there's more to come. If you liked it, go to patreon.com/astrologist and go get your bonus episode. What the hell are you waiting for? Evolutionstake.com. Get your tickets.